Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. It was just 3 months ago that President Obama gave a speech that his advisors touted as an economic reset. Remember that? An attempt to refocus his agenda on economic growth over his last 3 years in office. But the economic road forward for Obama is a rocky one. And just this week, we see how rocky on all sides. From the right, we have the Tea Party wing threatening to hold up the next budget and create a new debt ceiling showdown. And the left just managed to pressure Obama's top choice for Fed nominee, Lawrence Summers, to withdraw his name from consideration. Elizabeth Williamson is here to discuss the two challenges and more. She is D.C. correspondent for The Wall Street Journal. Elizabeth, welcome back to WNYC. Let's move to Lawrence Summers withdrawing his name, the former Harvard president, Clinton economic advisor, Obama advisor. He was Treasury Secretary under Clinton, withdrew his name yesterday from consideration to be the next Fed chairman after Ben Bernanke's term expires, saying, quote, any possible confirmation process for me would be acrimonious, unquote. So why this timing, Elizabeth? Haven't we known it was going to be acrimonious? In fact, hasn't it already been acrimonious for some time?
It has been. And in fact, a lot of people would point to that as kind of the problem with this nomination from the get-go. There is a certain pattern that the president is following when he announces some of these things. And you saw it actually in Syria. And there are some on the Syria fight. There are some folks who are saying, you know, he needs to revise the way he goes about these things. You cannot hang this stuff out there in front of Congress, let them shoot at it for several weeks, and then pull it off the floor or wait for some, you know, sort of regretfully fold in a way. And that's what's happened with the Summers thing. He was looking at what was happening with the Syria vote, which looked, you know, certain to fail until this, you know, kind of semi-lifeline came in the form of an agreement with the Russians and Syria to try and corral some of these chemical weapons, got him off the hook on that. But the fact that, you know, Congress wasn't even in session when he would float something like that out there and just allow them to take partisan pot shots at it. And in this case, in the Syria case, from both sides, and with the Larry Summers situation, too, from both sides. I mean, it was really a liberal revolt that cost him this potential for nomination.
Yeah, at least three Democrats on the banking committee had said they would vote against Summers. Most recently, the centrist Democrat John Tester of Montana, who seemed to be the final straw because it meant that Obama would have to rely on the Republicans on the committee to even get this out of committee in opposition to some in his own party. So the criticism of Summers is that he was part of the economic team that helped deregulate the derivatives market during the Clinton years, which helped lead to the financial crisis. So why was Obama so keen on Summers anyway?
He felt that Summers, okay, you know, that acknowledging that criticism, he felt that Summers was not only, you know, much more a part of the solution than a part of the problem. His liberal critics would point to Summers' involvement in the derivative markets. They would say that he is a too close of a friend of Wall Street, and those were the reasons to oppose his nomination. But what Obama would point to is the fact that he was on his economic team when they were trying to craft a solution to this and pull the nation out of this crisis, and that, you know, he did far more to do that than he ever did to contribute to the deregulation that led to the problem in the first place. But there was also some additional criticism, and that was from women who saw him as a misogynist and cited some, you know, conflicts that he'd had both at Harvard and also as part of the government, that he was dismissive and you know, really tended to clash more with women. So it was really one of those things where everybody had a chance to, you know, dig through the man's career dossier and point to things they didn't like, because the potential for nominating him had been out there for a couple months.
And, of course, many women and women's groups were resentful of Summers for what he said as president of Harvard back then about women's ability in math and science. I have that quote. He said, There is relatively clear evidence that whatever the difference in means, which can be debated, there is a difference in the standard deviation and variability of a male and female population. In other words, he was suggesting that women were born unable to do math and science at a greater rate than men. And so no surprise with Janet Yellen, the other prime candidate for Fed chairman, a woman who's the current vice chair of the Federal Reserve, that Terry O'Neill, the president of the National Organization for Women, reacted today to Summers pulling out this way.
The White House was indicating that the president would pass over the better qualified woman for the less qualified man who happened to be his friend. This is something that women have seen over and over and over and over again in our working lives, and it makes us cross-eyed with frustration.
That was Terry O'Neill, president of the National Organization for Women, on Morning Edition today. This is WNYC FM HD and AM New York, and WNJT FM 88.1 Trenton, WNJP 88.5 Sussex, WNJY 89.3 Netcong, and WNJO 90.3 Toms River, New York and New Jersey Public Radio. My guest, Elizabeth Williamson, D.C. correspondent for The Wall Street Journal. So feminist and economic progressives allied to shoot down this Larry Summers nomination.
Yeah, really a highly unusual situation. And, you know, it is something that has some precedent in the Obama administration, though, this opposition from women's groups. Women's groups have repeatedly pointed to some of the president's choices and said, why didn't you consider this woman or that woman? Or why aren't there just generally not enough women in your administration? And so I think things like this tend to bring that simmering frustration to a boiling point.
And so tell me about Yellen. She's the second in command at the Fed now. She's a woman. She's been part of the Fed stimulus efforts since 2008. I guess she doesn't have the baggage that Summers has in terms of the Clinton years. But was she at the Fed or, you know, a proponent of the same kind of policies that Alan Greenspan was for, that Ben Bernanke early on in his term were for, that are seen as helping lead to the financial crisis?
She's seen as a proponent of the Fed's easy money policies. In other words, you know, right now, as we know, they're in the markets buying up $85 billion worth of bonds every month to try and keep interest rates low. The markets are rising on Summers' withdrawal because they feel like she is the, you know, probably the most legit second choice. And they feel like then that action in the markets would continue. It's significant that the Fed meets tomorrow and Wednesday, and they'll look at, you know, not only jobs data, but the shakeup in their own ranks when they make decisions on whether or not to taper back on that purchase every month, you know, the $85 billion in bonds. And she's seen as someone who favors continuing for a while longer, and the markets like that. But the thing is with her is that now these same groups who opposed Larry Summers have pushed so hard for her that it's annoyed the president. And he may turn to another choice just because he doesn't want to be pushed around in that manner. And he is under some pressure to show a little more spine on some of these things and to push harder for what he wants. So it may be that he passes her over and goes for someone else. There are, you know, four or five names in the mix. There's Tim Geithner, who said over and over, the former Treasury Secretary, who said over and over that he doesn't want the job. There's Roger Ferguson, who's the head of TIAA at Cref, who, you know, had been a vice chairman under Alan Greenspan. So there you'd see something different. He would be the first African-American to head the central bank, were he to be appointed. Stanley Fisher, who was the head of the Bank of Israel, big international financier who'd been at the World Bank. Donald Cohn, a former Fed vice chairman, just like Yellen, who's now at the Brookings Institution and is involved with the Bank of England on its financial policy committee. So quite a stable of talent to choose from there. And it may be that he passes her over just to sort of show his liberal critics that he's not going to completely bow to them.
So I want to switch topics from resistance on the left to Obama's Fed pick to resistance from the right on Obama's budget plans. The House has voted 42 times, lest anybody lose count, to repeal Obamacare since it passed in 2010. And now House Republicans have a new tactic. They won't negotiate on legislation to keep the government open past September 30th. That's September 30th, as in 2 weeks from today,
right,
unless it includes legislation that defunds, delays, or repeals the health care law. Are we headed for a government shutdown in 2 weeks?
That is anybody's guess, but I would say probably not. And the only reason for that is that the Republicans would be so roundly criticized for that, that a party that's already lost significant credibility on the Hill would lose even more. I think Boehner and the leadership would do everything they possibly could to head off that type of a deal. At the same time, they're not in full control of these 50 maverick conservatives on the House side that just keep pushing this. And, you know, you mentioned 42 times they think 43 is the charm. Of course it won't be. But, you know, in anything that they propose, and that is a compromise that they're talking about, you know, put something together, the continuing resolution that would keep the government funded, attach a symbolic measure on Obamacare, and then have the whole thing go down in the Senate, have them strip that out and then continue to fund the government. But, you know, it's going to be a big fight, and it's going to be one that's really public, visible, and frustrating to people who are looking at it from the outside, like voters.
And really, for the last several years, particularly around budget battles, John Boehner has often had to play the role of what people in the establishment see as adult in the room, and what I guess most Americans other than the Tea Party wing see as the adult in the room. He's tried to placate the Tea Party wing while also avoiding a government shutdown or debt ceiling collapse. Last Thursday, he reached out to Democrats to try and find common ground. But on the same day, he also said he would, quote, do everything we can to fully repeal Obamacare. So is this just the Boehner dance all over again? And is he all over the place, or is he in one place?
He definitely doesn't want yet another vote on Obamacare, but he knows that he has to deliver something more than symbolic to these conservatives. He is trying to be the adult in the room, but he's outnumbered by children. I mean, that's really the bottom line here. So they think that they've got this plan that will, you know, there are other fronts they can fight on here. One is food stamps. They're now trying to double the amount of money that they're trying to turn from 20 to 40 billion, the amount of money that Republicans will try and strip out of the food stamp program. He'll start to point to different things other than Obamacare and say, look, we can get something on this. We can get something on this. Obama's not touching sequestration, by the way. You know, the signals that he's sending is that whatever passes on the budget will continue to keep sequestration in place, which is seen as a big loss for the president, but something of a victory for Republicans. I mean, you be the judge. But it might be something that Boehner can point to say, look, this is not a zero-sum game here on Obamacare. We've got other stuff that are victories in the making for us, and maybe try to rein them in that way.
Well, here we go with
I know,
the end of summer coming. It's also the end of Summers, the lightning rod. Larry Summers out as a candidate for Federal Reserve Board chair.
Summer's over.
Construct that sentence any way you want. And President Obama and the Democrats and Republicans in Congress facing all Americans' favorite thing is fall is about to begin, another budget deadline, possible government shutdown deadline in 2 weeks. We thank Elizabeth Williamson, D.C. reporter for The Wall Street Journal, for filling us in. Thank you so much.
Brian, you're welcome. Great to be with you, as always.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And this is a day, if you didn't hear this news in the last few days, when humanity has one of our creations outside the solar system for the first time, the Voyager 1 spacecraft. So right after a break, we'll talk about this with the brightest stars in the cosmos gazing universe, Neil deGrasse Tyson from the Museum of Natural History and the Planetarium there, and Ann Drian, co-founder of Cosmos Studios, and who happens to be Carl Sagan's widow. Stay with us. For those guests, Brian Lehrer on WNYC.